Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We hit the guest hotline powered by Gruber Law. One call, that's all. And we say hello to Joe Bartle from RotoWire. Joey B., what's going on, dude?
Hey, happy to hear from you. You know, it's a little bit early as we're talking early July, but there's always time for fantasy football conversation. So happy to be here with you.
Yeah, there's a little posturing going on in a lot of worlds of the dates and finding the dates for the draft, because a live draft is still alive and well. And I know the online drafts, there's something to be said about those too, because those can be done in like 90 minutes and we're all done in standard format pretty much. You set the timer and off you go. And if not, one thing I don't like about that auto draft is just that. If you're live in the session and you don't have your player selection, you should just skip it. It shouldn't default to what they deem as the next best player. What do you think about that?
That's great. I don't know how you'd code that, though. I mean, honestly, when those online drafts are happening, the way that the queue typically works is that the ADP of the site, whether it be ESPN, Yahoo, you know, pick your poison, they'll be about a few weeks behind. So I actually find that the people who aren't there and getting auto-drafted will usually, if you're in a sharp enough room, get the players that are just like completely toxic assets that you don't want to have at all. And it feels like just desserts. So in that way, I'm like, ha ha, you have, you know, Joe Mixon, for example, who possibly doesn't have toes on his feet and wasn't going to play at all last year, like at a round 6 or 7 ADP. Like that's just like the vengeful person in me. I always appreciate when that happens. But, you know, you do hear the horror stories of people getting auto-drafted teams and winning their leagues. That's mm-hmm. also, I guess, the downside of that, too. So I get both sides. And to your point, though, I mean, I was in 17 leagues last year, and we drafted 3 of them live. There is nothing else like doing a live fantasy draft. It's one of the reasons I got into this industry 10 years ago. I remember doing my very first one at our family's cottage, just a family league, just overall, and just falling in love with, I don't know the correct terminology in radio, but the banter that you would do with people when making draft picks. Mm-hmm. Like that, to me, I will be chasing that for the rest of my life, and it's why if I could always do a live draft, I will choose to do so, and I will always value those more than others.
Yeah, to me, topped out at 7 leagues and in a holding pattern these days of 6, and I would say, what, 3? Yeah, half are live drafts, and those can be pleasurable and painful all at the same time, because it's, you know, typically the same longtime, you know, friends and acquaintances. The one is from 1988, so we've seen kids and now grandkids and the whole deal. But the same jokes, they just pop up all the time. I don't know. I do get a kick out of both. I do, and I with a, it depends on your schedule. So Joe, I'm going to lead things off here with the Green Bay Packers, and since we're in the state of Wisconsin, I don't think you'll ever get a steal of a deal on a Green Bay Packer. What do you mm-hmm. think?
No, you're entirely right. Honestly, and I mean, you guys know, I'm born and bred Green Bay Packer fan through and through. Yes, I bleed blood, but we also have green and gold that comes out sometimes too. Like, you will never find a more passionate Packer fan than me, and I would imagine most of the people listening to the station would feel the same way as well, too. I think outside of the state of Wisconsin, the Packers offense from a fantasy perspective has mixed reviews, if not outright skepticism. And I don't really understand why. I mean, we had the Packers offense from a PFF perspective be one of the most efficient each of the past 3 years under Matt LaFleur's offense. And now he's forced to condense a rotation that was frustrating from a fantasy perspective. No Dontavian Wicks, no Romeo Dobbs. I don't even think they can do a lot of 12 personnel stuff. Like Luke Musgrave, just not the kind of blocker. You know, Fitzpatrick is gone, so they have a Josh Wiley in that sort of role. Like, you saw the Packers this offseason, I thought, correctly, extend both Christian Watson and Jaden Reed because they know how important those two players are going to be. And provided they stay healthy, it's probably going to have a good look in their contract come next year with the role they're going to have. And yet, Matthew Golden, for example, who probably is the biggest beneficiary of Dobbs and Wicks, well, he's a round 9 or 10 pick. And Jaden Reed's round 8. And Christian Watson is right in the same wage range of like Carnell Tate or Jordan Tyson, who are rookies that haven't even established anything. Or like BTJ, Brian Thomas Jr. of the Jags, who was incredibly disappointing. And I get the concerns with Christian Watson's injury history, but to me, he feels like he's going to be one of those guys that's like a guaranteed 12 yards receiving if he just stays healthy all year, which is a big if. So I completely agree with you. And again, I would imagine anyone doing fantasy drafts in Wisconsin probably will see not as much value as you would in other places. But I have seen most fantasy experts and analysts kind of have pessimism or just outright disinterest in the Packers offense, and I do not understand why.
Joe, when you look across the NFC North in general, I think a lot of media outlets have been looking at that division and said, that's a shoot-up. Like, it doesn't matter which team you pick. You could be right that they could be in first place, they could be in last place throughout the season. When it comes to looking at the rosters from a fantasy perspective, is that the same case? Are you looking at all four teams as all these groups have super high upside when it comes to fantasy? The Vikings with Kyler Murray, potentially. Justin Jefferson's always a weapon going to be there. If the rest of their wide receiver and receiving room is healthy, they could be dangerous. The Lions have Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's always going to be a weapon. The Packers have a new and kind of solidified group over there, which could help. And the Bears have a ton of weapons, too. Are you looking at it as a pretty toss-up type of situation when it comes to what rosters you should be eyeing in the NFC North when it comes to fans?
Yeah, loaded question, but great question. The Bears one is the most optimistic I've seen from just outside people. Everyone's really excited for year two Ben Johnson, and what does this mean for Luther Burden now that DJ Moore is gone? And if you aren't a Luther Burden truther, well, then surely Rome Odunze will finally have his time in the sun. And if you're not really in on both of those, then it has to be Colson Loveland. And oh, by the way, Caleb Williams is throwing for 5,000 yards. It's like, I get it. I understand where that is. I'm not really like out on the Bears offense, but there is just a lot of expectations for a franchise and a team that really has never done that before. And all on the decision that Ben Johnson is just going to continue to have this crazy advantage over the rest of the NFL, which might be true. I mean, I believe he is one of the best offensive minds in the NFL. So theoretically, he should be able to adjust to whatever defense are going to throw him. But it will be harder now that the NFL is aware of what the Bears are, right? We're not going to have seven late game comebacks in the same vein. Just as historically, this has happened as often when teams do that. So you'll see a lot of fantasy analysts kind of recommend and tout the Bears offensive guys. I don't really mind that call. Again, I'm all in on the Packers, and it seems like that's not one of those that's interesting. I will say, though, the Kyler Murray acquisition, again, getting him as a free agent signing after he was cut to the Cardinals, getting a nice contract in that way, they didn't have to really worry about signing to any long-term deal, and you get kind of the upside play if this Kyler Murray does well on the cheap. That's been really intriguing to me for a guy like Justin Jefferson, who at one point in early February, you know, we do these drafts all year. I was drafting with other experts, was more like a early second round pick. Now Justin Jefferson is probably like pick 9, 10, 11, maybe ahead of James Cook, ahead of CeeDee Lamb. I think Jefferson's going to just be awesome with Kyler Murray, and I think Kevin O'Connell's going to be in a good spot. And Jordan Addison, also kind of past that Jaden Reed range of receivers. I think Jordan Addison's going to do really, really well with Kyler Murray, too. It's the Lions that I have some reservations with, and it's going to be one of the big things I point to, really, for any fantasy advice I give this year. I believe the coaching schemes and specifically coordinators are the area that you can find fantasy value in the most right now. And specifically, Drew Petzing, the really bad offensive coordinator for the Cardinals last year, is now the offensive coordinator for the Lions. I don't think that makes a huge difference for Amon-Ra St. Brown's value. I think he's more or less airtight with what he does for Jared Goff. But if you're betting that Jameson Williams was going to explode, can I point to Marvin Harrison being one of the biggest disappointments in recent memory? Sam Laporta could be the Cardinals' Trey McBride, but I don't think Sam Laporta is nearly that good. So I have major reservations about Drew Petzing making this Lions offense be as effective, as efficient as they have been in past years. And that's the one, if I'm fading of the four, I'm probably going to Detroit.
But I think, though, that with Detroit, however, I would have to take a look, and I haven't gone, you know, six or seven levels deep here. Did they make changes on that offensive line? And to me, if they improve that offensive line, the skill position players, you just rattled them off there. I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs and Goff and Amon-Ra and that a veteran tight end like that, I don't see a major – I think it's a safe play if you're going to go with Detroit offense if they didn't make a bunch of changes on the O-line.
Yeah, the Lions offensive line currently is kind of what the Packers were the year before they signed Aaron Banks. So like they were kind of in the midst of retooling things over a two-year period. You had the Jordan Morgan selection. Do you choose to extend Zach Tom? Well, they obviously do, right? But like, is Elgin Jenkins going to be healthy? And we now see kind of what that bared out fruit-wise in the 2025-2026 season. The Lions drafted a first-round tackle. This was not a great draft class overall, but the idea was, hey, we'll have him keep it on the right side, Blake Miller, and then we'll have Penei Sewell go to the left side. That, to my understanding, is still going to be what happens, which is interesting that you move an all-pro right tackle to left tackle. Hope he ends up being Tristan Wirfs of the Bucks. We'll have to see. Then they made some smaller interior offensive line moves, but nothing dramatic.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
They didn't really have a whole lot of resources this offseason, so it's kind of one of those, just don't let that destroy your team. But we know, given all the injuries that the Packers seem to suffer every single year, all it takes is maybe two of those guys up front out for a duration of time, and that will be a weak offensive line no matter what. So, no, I agree with you. I mean, Gibbs is conventionally pick one or pick two in any draft, any format. I'm not saying don't draft Gibbs. I've been drafting a lot of St. Brown in full-point PPR leagues, but I just have major reservations about Drew Petzing operating a functioning offense with Jared Goff, and I just don't think that's going to look very good. So that's, again, the one concern I have is in the NFC North, I think it's the Lions offense.
Okay, Nicolay Law talking text line 414-677-1250 if you want to ask Joe a question. Joe Bartle from RotoWire. I did have a question that popped up, I want to say several weeks ago, and that was a couple of young running backs. He wanted to get your thoughts on these guys. And that was Omarion Hampton and Cam Scadabo. He's talking dynasty, so you're looking years down the line. I think I like his situation. If he's got to pick between the two of them, he's not in a horrible situation. But who do you like out of those two? What do you project for both of them?
Yeah, I mean, let's do this both ways, with dynasty and in a redraft. I think Omarion Hampton this year is one of the biggest windfalls you can possibly get, and he's normally going like pick 16. So think about that. Here's Joe Bartle, the fantasy analyst, saying, hey, a guy that is going to be conventionally a top top two pick overall is going to have one of the biggest fantasy difference makers of this year, and you can get him whenever you want. I typically like to take him at the late first, and then you can come back with another running back, or you go like a Lamb or Jefferson in the late first, then get Hampton in the second. Like, I'm convinced he is going to be a superstar for this. Again, going back to the coaching matters thing, Mike McDaniel, now the new offensive coordinator, formerly the head coach of the Dolphins, he made Devon Achane be a thing, but more importantly, I think he's going to fit so well with what Justin Herbert does in that offense, and Omarion Hampton is going to be the bell cow. There just aren't many of those left in the NFL, and here's a guy that can be a pass catcher and a runner, so I love him from a redraft perspective. I've been doing a Dynasty deep dive series on my Twitter, JB Fantasy Sports, and one of the very first moves I made when I took over a new team, I had pick 1-1. That would be conventionally Jeremiah Love, now number 3 over pick by the Cardinals. And I traded the package effectively to get Tucker Kraft, who I love this year, and Omarion Hampton. So I like Omarion Hampton more than Jeremiah Love in dynasty purposes, and that is not the conventional wisdom at all. I think you can actually get Hampton plus something for Jeremiah Love. And I'm just convinced that at least over the foreseeable future, let's just say the rookie year contract for the Los Angeles Charger running back, that Hampton is going to be a guy in the top 4, top 5 at the position. Bijan, Jahmyr Gibbs, and then I think it could be Omarion Hampton and Ashton Jeanty in that conversation. Maybe if there's another injury that happens, I could be wrong about this, but you mentioned the Lions getting a little bit of a chance to improve their offensive line. Well, the Chargers did. They signed Biashi, the center, of course, from the Badgers, but he played for the Commanders last year. And then they're basically getting back to David Bakhtiaris and Joe Alt and Rashawn Slater, who both missed substantial time last year due to injury. So I'm convinced the Chargers offense under Mike McDaniel is going to be awesome, and I love Omarion Hampton much more relative to Cam Scadabo, who plays like he wants to run through cement, although he actually does, and that makes me really worried from a long-term perspective.
Joe, you mentioned Ashton Jeanty. What are expectations for him going into his second season here with Fernando Mendoza potentially starting at quarterback? If it's not Kirk Cousins, they may start him to start the season. A lot of questions still there, but it looks like they improved their offensive line a little bit too. Is he going to have a kind of bounce back year from a disappointing rookie season in many people's eyes? Or does the fact that you are bringing in this rookie quarterback, a veteran quarterback that's better than the options you had in the past, take away from opportunities for him?
Charlie, we got to have this hammered down now by this point. What is the biggest difference for this year? Coaching matters. Mm-hmm. And you have Clint Kubiak now, the former former offensive coordinator of the Seahawks, now the head coach of the Raiders. And we saw how that Seahawks offense looked fantastic last year, even with a guy like Sam Darnold. I think Clint Kubiak is going to make Fernando Mendoza maybe not a star, but you're going to be really happy with the efficiency that he has when he ends up playing. I think it's going to be Kirk Cousins, let's say, through the end of October. The Raiders aren't going to be a good team just yet, so it doesn't matter that Mendoza's not starting right away. But when Mendoza is playing, he is going to look every bit, I think, worth this number one overall pick from this class. And it's because Clint Kubiak, I believe, is going to be really scheming things efficiently. To that point, because Clint Kubiak is there, I think Ashton Jeanty is going to be in a really good spot. Now, the Raiders have Mike Washington, who is a combine darling. I think he's a fourth-round pick as the backup. They really have nothing else. I don't think Mike Washington's more of a pass-catching guy. So Jeanty might, too, also be kind of a workhorse. And the only reason he's not being drafted higher, which is that I think at the ADP from a redraft perspective, more like pick 9, 10, 11 range again, it's because what you mentioned. He was so disappointing last year. I think Jeanty actually, despite all the circumstances, did really good.
And figured it out.
I wasn't expecting a whole lot more than what ended up being over 1,000 yards receiving. I'm sorry, 1,000 yards totally, had a lot more receiving yards in that way, and was becoming a pass catcher. And then they made that monster signing with Tyler Linderbaum, the stud center from the Ravens to the Raiders in that massive contract. So I think there's a ceiling cap to him. He won't have a Christian McCaffrey season. I think Bijan and Gibbs are like light years higher than what I think Ashton Jeanty is. And pound to pound, I think Amari Hampton outscores Ashton Jeanty as well. But you need Amari Hampton a little bit later than Ashton Jeanty. I just like double tapping them both in the late first round, saying, hey, I got my bell cow set for the entire year. Let me go find receivers later on. Like, that's been my preferred draft strategy when I've been doing a lot of best ball leagues right now. And I'm convinced Ashton Jeanty is going to be set for a better year too.
And those receivers, to your point, man, you can dart throw a lot of those receivers or make moves within campaign. Some of the bigger names that have moved around a little bit, get your comments on a Mike Evans out of Tampa. You get Michael Pittman, which that might be a little bit. He might fall into my personal sleeper category. You have A.J. Brown. So some of the bigger names, your thoughts?
Yeah, the A.J. Brown one first. I won't make any Dianne Russini jokes, but we have been assuming that trade was going to happen for a long time. I think he's going to be a massive weapon for Drake May and the Patriots, and I think from a football perspective, that's the exact move I would want if I was a Patriots fan. He's right now going as like a late second round, early third round pick. I think I feel comfortable with that. That's kind of like in the Chris Olave territory, and Olave was awesome last year, but the Saints drafted Jordan Tyson in the top 10. Maybe Tyson takes away targets. Like, I'm comfortable with A.J. Brown for the immediate future as like a buy, and I'll be fine building my roster around that. Mike Evans is a little bit different. I think he's either 33 or 34 years old. I guess my age is quite correct. But you would assume to be a boundary receiver in this Niners offense. I think Mike Evans is a can't-miss slam-dunk Hall of Famer. But even in those circumstances, for those types of receivers, we know it's hard to make transitions when you've been in one situation, one familiarity, all the way to another. I love it for Mike Evans trying to win football games and trying to be a more prominent spot, maybe get another Super Bowl ring. I don't know if I care to draft him in fantasy. He's going like around 4 or 5 spot. Devonta Adams in that same area as well, too. Both those guys, I'm probably fading a little bit more than the consensus right now. And Wandale Robinson's a very popular name. He signed from the Giants to the Titans. Joins Brian Daboll in Tennessee, full-point PPR maven. I still think Carnell Tate can have a better impact with Cam Ward, but I think Wandale Robinson's one of those cheaper names as well, too, that you can kind of consider. It's tough with a lot of these, and Michael Pittman as well, too. It's tough with these guys where you're like, we know the names, but the circumstances make them a little bit tough, like a little bit more, I would say, uneasy. I don't mind Michael Pittman. We called him actually on SiriusXM earlier today or yesterday. One of the boring picks that you can make in round 8 or 9. No one's going to be happy when you're at your live drafts or popping in the back saying, oh, great pick. But I do think Aaron Rodgers needed that target that he could feel comfortable doing. It's why guys like Adam Thielen and Marquez Valdes-Scantling were playing as much as they were for Pittsburgh last year, just because Rodgers needs his pet project toy veterans to comfortably use. you're having to, you need Michael Pittman to get close to like 80 catches and 1,000 receiving yards. And I think that's possible within this offense. Maybe Mike McCarthy has some new tricks up his sleeve that I'm unaware of, but I guess I just don't want many parts of Pittsburgh at the moment.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of which, how about a Garrett Wilson in that jet situation? What's going on there?
Yeah. Geno Smith returns to New York after getting punched in the face and left. Now half decade or more later on, Geno Smith's going to be a more capable veteran quarterback than what they have been dealing with the past couple of years, but still Geno Smith, and it's still the New York Jets. Their offense line, ironically, is probably one of the best in the league. I think it's going to get underreported just because of how bad that offense will be in general. But theoretically, Geno Smith under a competent offensive line, you still have Breece Hall there as well. They extended this offseason and got like Garrett Wilson. They invested in multiple first-round picks in pass catchers Omar Cooper, Kenyon Sadiq as well, too, the stud tight end from Oregon. Like, on paper, it makes sense. You just have to have Geno Smith be way more effective than he was for Las Vegas last year. I think he will be. I've been liking Garrett Wilson as like a late third, early fourth round PPR receiver. The only issue is I like a lot of other guys in that range, too. So, like, there's Tet McMillan and Zay Flowers with Baltimore as well in that same spot, and sometimes T. Higgins falls as well, too. So, realistically, it's why I go back to my favorite builds often have one, if not two, receivers in the first 24 picks. Sorry, one or two running backs in the first 24 picks, because I like a lot of the receivers that fall a little bit after that.
Yeah, there's that just an abundance of receivers that are all sort of, you can make an argument for all of them,
right,
for or against. And some of those receivers that after week 10, you're like, why? What was I thinking on this guy? But to find out more information, Joe Bartle, where can they go to find out your stuff?
Yeah, you can follow me on JB Fantasy Sports on Twitter. I'm also going to be on SiriusXM for the next 2 months, Sunday through Wednesday, noon to 2 p.m. Central Time, 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern. I go through, like, we try to do themes every single show. So last show was more like a best ball focus. We had veteran talk about a lot of these guys that moved away. Really trying to catch you up for when you have fantasy draft season, which is coming up here in the next couple weeks. So Channel 87 on SiriusXM, Sunday through Wednesday, noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. Otherwise, on my Twitter, JB Fantasy Sports.
Awesome. Joe, you're getting big time, man. Thanks for the time. I appreciate that.
All right. Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.